I will be speaking about dark matter searchers. So often when people ask me, what do? I say particle cosmology. And I mostly speak in particle physics environments, and then I'm trying to bring the cosmology aspects to the problem, explaining to people that dark matter is not a particle physics problem, it's an astrophysics problem. Here, I have to do, I am the closest to a particle physicist that we have in the audience, so I will have to do a little bit of the opposite. So what I will try to, I will be speaking about weakly interactive massive particles in a generic a consequence of new physics at the TeV scale, at about 1,000 times the mass of the proton. And I would like to make a very strong argument that we need a combination of at least three approaches, some based on the accelerators, LHC, some based on direct detection, trying to find the WIMPs in the laboratory, and indirect detection, such as the, what we discussed yesterday with about GLAST. So I will be mostly, for the direct detection of WIMPs, I will be trying to convey to you the revolution of noble liquids, which are our competitors, and then I will tell you about the photon-mediated detectors that I and Harry Nelson and Joe over there are involved in. And then I'll say a few words about the gamma rays in the direct detection, reflecting about yesterday. Now, this is quite a bit for 30 minutes. I will leave to the discussions if you're interested about DAMA, PAMELA, or axions, or whatever you want to discuss. We can do that at that time. So the cosmology is clear, I believe, for everybody. We have a very consistent picture, but very surprising, where we have something like 74% of dark energy, 25% or whatever, 23% of this of dark matter, a little bit of ordinary matter, and of course we are asking ourselves what it is. And what we are pretty convinced that it is not ordinary matter in terms of what baryons. And the main reason is actually coming from this measurement of either by primordial nuclear synthesis or by WMAP of the abundance of baryons, which is much smaller than the abundance of mass that we need. Even internally to WMAP, at least for a flat universe, we have something like a 15 sigma discrepancy between the amount of physical amount of mass that you need and the amount of baryons. Okay. We also know that it is mostly cold, not like neutrinos, because they will basically wipe out the small scale structure. The most ambitious estimate trying to combine everything by Urosh Seljak says something like the mass of the neutrino is less than 0.17 electron volts. I'm ready to believe a factor 10 on top of that, but that's at least the order of magnitude. The standard particle physics model has been very successful, but you may know that the model is unstable. The Higgs, if you begin to put higher order corrections, the mass of the Higgs goes to infinity, or to the Planck mass, which is infinity for all particles. And it brings with it the W and the Z. And so our major problem in particle physics is to understand why the W and the Z is roughly at the times the mass of the proton. Okay. So you need new physics at that scale, either supersymmetry or large additional dimensions. And in order to prevent the proton to decay through this new physics, you have to introduce a new quantum number which will make the supersymmetric particles or the lowest, the lightest supersymmetric particle or the lowest excitation of this Kaluza-Klein excitation of this additional dimensions stable. And that could be the dark matter. Okay. So now, one thing which is quite remarkable, if we bring cosmology and particle physics together, and if we just add one hypothesis that dark matter is made of particles which were in thermal equilibrium in the early universe and decoupled when they were non-relativistic. Okay? In that case, you can relate the energy density today to the annihilation rate of those particles. Put a density of the order of a quarter of the critical density, we get an annihilation rate which is of the order of the weak interactions, as if the physics at the W and Z scale was responsible for dark matter. So cosmology are measurement of the relic density plus this assumption of thermal equilibrium points to the W and Z scale. Maybe a coincidence. And as I said before, the standard particle physics needs new physics at this scale. And has to introduce stable particles that we have not seen, of course, and which could provide a significant amount of dark matter. So this is why the WIMP hypothesis has been so popular among the cosmology and particle physicists. So there are really two generic methods. One is to try to detect the WIMPs which are in the halo of our galaxy, and we are in the halo of the galaxy in this room, and they are literally, if they are 100 times the mass of the proton, they are literally a billion of such particles going through each of us every second. Okay? Or to do that indirectly through detection of annihilation products, and I will speak about that a little bit later. And then, of course, we can try to probe this physics, new physics at the TeV scale with the Large Hadron Collider, which is just coming online. So one of the theme, sorry. Oh. Can I? Okay. One of the theme I would like, if you don't remember anything but my talk, what I would like just to remember, or just one thing, is that really we need the three kinds of methods, okay, to try to understand what. We need direct detection. This is a picture of CDMS, which is currently leading the field. We could, we need accelerators. You don't see very much of the LHC, but it's below there, because the Geneva, the Mont Blanc is there. And then we need WIMP annihilation of cosmos, either atmospheric chunk of detectors or the GLAST Fermi satellite. Okay, so. And why do we need those? Okay, the direct detection may very well, we hope, provide a detection one day, and even an idea of the cross sections of the and the mass, if it's not too high. But we won't answer the question: what is the fundamental physics behind it? Okay, and may not be able to give also very detailed information about the galaxy itself. Okay. The LHC could produce, very well produce these particles, and this could become actually the first evidence, could come relatively rapidly as missing energy. If you have these new particles leaving the detector, okay, you have missing transverse energy, and you could detect that. But we have no idea that these particles, whether these particles are stable or not. You know that they have just escaped your detector. And you need direct detection or indirect detection type of experiments to show that these particles are the ones which are present in the cosmos. So it's unfair to just say, I don't think it's accurate when LHC says we will detect the dark matter in the universe. We will detect particles which could be the dark matter in the universe, but it is important for us to look directly into the universe to check that they are the same particle. Okay. And of course, actually, that's much a little bit of a detail, but it turns out that they are very complementary also. They are, at the beginning, LHC will, well, very likely LHC will have a hard time reconstructing this big ladder of decays, and actually some help from the direct detection for instance, about the mass and so on could be useful. Indirect iteration is very useful. As we discussed yesterday, maybe may very well provide a smoking gun from both dark matter. And if we look at the cerebellos, also of the hierarchical structure formation, okay? But there will be always ambiguities. Every time, how many times in the past, every time there is a signal at high energy of something, photon, electron, or positrons, the first reaction is this dark matter? But in most cases, it's probably just a supernova remnant of some type. So there are lots of ambiguities. So we need direct detection to, or LHC to confirm these things. And now, in detail, these things are not exactly as sensitive. Okay, the sensitivity of a particular technique depends on the region of parameter space, and there will be actually complementarity. And let me try to go back to that in a second, if I can. So I said a few things in the discussion section yesterday. The supersymmetric part, there are hundreds of parameters in supersymmetry, or something like that. So, but you try to refine a little bit this space. And there are things like M. Sugra would trying to reduce that like to 4 parameters and a sign. And this is useful to try to define typical regions. So these are two masses of scalars and masses of fermions in your theory. And the argument that I have given you mostly applies to this bulk region there at small masses. But there are also regions which give things which are compatible with the WIMPs. And this is the so-called focus point region, which is important because it is a relatively large mass of the scalars and may lead to difficulty for the LHC. There are also these X-funnels and co-annihilation. Bulk, the bulk is a generic argument. I think it's just a generic argument. Focus point, I forget now exactly why it was called that way. It is a region where there is a lot of mixing between the Reno and the Beano. So it couples, for instance, it couples to Z bosons and gives relatively large annihilation cross section. Anyway, and so the LHC look at low energy, and this is will be mostly looking in this region, okay? And GLAST is sensitive to regions which are mostly annihilation, and is mostly the focus point region and this X funnel. Okay. Very rapidly, let me speak about direct detection. So WIMPs going through your detector at 300 kilometers per second, that's not very much for particle physicists, and deposit 15 keV, which is very small for particle physicists. The expected rates are very low. Our current limit is 1 event per kilogram and per 2 months, roughly. Okay, so that's much lower than radioactivity. Now, what saves you is that your interactions is mostly with a nuclear recoil, with a nucleus, and you are looking for a nuclear recoil, a nuclear recoiling at a velocity of the order of 300 kilometers per second, so it does not produce a lot of ionization, for instance, okay? And your radioactivity, if you have no neutrons around, is interacting with the electrons, and which and there is a lot of difference between an electron of 15 keV, say, and a nucleus of 15 keV. Electron 15 keV is much more ionizing. So the idea is really to recognize these two. to distinguish between these two and basically get rid of the background that way. Signatures, nuclear recoils, you don't expect your particle to scatter twice, contrary to photons or neutrons, which are scattering every few centimeters in the dense detector. And it should be uniform. And eventually, you would like to link it to the galaxy, either through the annular modulation, but we need several thousand events to have a decent signal, or directionality. This would be actually the best thing to do. Most of the WIMPs are coming from the Cygnus region, because that's the direction in which the sun is going. And but the recoil is of the order of 100 angstroms in a solid. So it's very difficult to see the recoil. And this recoil will, but if you can see this recoil, for instance, in a low pressure gas, you could see this turn in the laboratory every 24 hours. This will be very powerful. Now, the other thing that I wanted to give you a feeling for is that it's a booming field. This is a plot that I have given, that I have made, I think, 2 years ago, about the number of people working in the field and as a function of the years. And these are all the technologies that people are putting. So I won't go through all the technologies. I will totally lose you. But the thing which is important is that you need at least two pieces of information to recognize nuclear recoil. Okay, and the three pieces of information that you could have is ionization, scintillation, or if you have detectors at low temperature, you can also detect the phonons created by the interactions, the vibrations of in the crystal. Okay, so you need to recognize the nuclear recoil, extract the rare, in order to extract the rare events. Generally speaking, you need as large an amount of information and as large a signal to noise as possible, because you are looking for very rare events. Okay, so I'm very late compared to what I wanted to do. So this is the status in early 2007. Let me introduce this graph, which will appear many times in my talk. So the way we present beta, and we all agree in the field that's about, we take a conventional first galactic model. And we all, except for one group, we are all using the same one. Okay? And then we plot the WIMP mass and the cross section on normalized to nucleons. So there are subtleties how you go to nucleons, but that's related to the coherent interactions. That's what we assume. And basically, you don't observe any events. And what you say, above such curves, and this was this curve that we had in 2005, you are very unlikely, 95%, only 5% of likely to observe no events, say, in our case, if you have a cross-section which is bigger than that. Okay? So these are upper limits. Now, there are three challenges, generally speaking. One is to understand and calibrate your detectors in a very unconventional way, places for particle detectors, 15 keV, very low background levels. Then you need to be background free, because as long as you are background free, your sensitivity as a function of the what we call the exposure, the product of the target mass by the time of duration of the experiment, goes linearly. I have zero event, my 95% confidence level is 2.3 events. Okay, so it's just constant. Okay, now then if you begin to have backgrounds, you have to subtract it, and this just sensitivity goes as 1/√, goes as square root now of MT, because you're limited by fluctuations, and then eventually it will go to a constant when you are limited by the systematic and the subtraction. So it's very important to be background free. And finally, you want to be increase the mass while maintaining the background free characteristics. Okay, so I will speak about two results very rapidly. Xenon-10 as generic for a liquid, noble liquid, and CDMS, which is my own experiment. And we could speak about DAMA in the discussion section. And there are new ideas that we can speak about. Okay. Okay, but so noble liquids, there have been a revolution recently with the noble liquids. They are both excellent scintillators and ionization detectors. So you can measure both the scintillation and ionization and extract the nuclear recoil signal that way. And now the two signals unfortunately overlap, but basically, so this is signal for electron recoils and for nuclear recoils. And basically by this blue curve is the same in both cases. So by 50%, with 50% efficiency of the nuclear recoils, you can reject 99% of the electrons. Okay. In addition, if you have liquid argon or neon, you have an additional handle, which is the rise time. Technical, but you want as many handles as possible. Now, the problem with argon is that it has argon-39, which is radioactive in your detector. So that's the price that you have to pay. So coming back to xenon. Okay, here our, the detector works. So this is bath of xenon. You have phototubes at the top and the bottom. Okay, and basically when you have an interaction, so there is a little bit of light which is produced that you detect. Then your electrons, there is electric field, your electron goes up, drift up, and then it gets into this gas region. This is the surface of the liquid. And you have a high field there, it begins to scintillate again. So you have two signals, and the distance between the two signals give you the depth. And then you separate between, okay, you pulse, you look, you have a pulse division between the phototubes, which gives you the X and Y, in some sense. This one was 10 liters, was 10 kilograms, which means 5 liters, something like that. So they do actually get a limit, which is very good, what they presented last year. And the question is whether, what about the challenges? Okay, so clearly this is a simple technology that where you can increase the mass fairly well. But now we have, don't want to be too technical, but the other challenges, I'm not sure that they understand their detectors, and they are certainly not background free at the moment, at least with these small volumes. For instance, they have 10 background events, okay, which are mostly in the periphery of the detector. So what they are saying, and I agree with them, let's make the detector bigger, and maybe this will improve. And that's what they are doing. Okay, so, and then there are actually small problems, technical problems we don't understand, or they don't understand what is happening in this region, which is the most important for their detectors. And I think the systematics are much larger than what they say. Okay. So their current plans, many, many detectors. So I just flash that you are not interested in the details, going to hundreds of kilograms, okay? And there is a clear danger, a little bit in the community. My detector is bigger than yours. and this, when I said that at the neutrino conference, there was a big uproar, especially from people who had big detectors. And of course, as I said, it is not the whole story. You have to have a detail and understand the phenomenology and the zero background. Okay, so let's go on to CDMS. The idea is to detect lower energy excitations. 15 kV is large by condensed matter physics standards. And if you could detect efficiently, 5 minutes left, okay. That's 22 minutes, okay. Yeah. But anyway, that's, okay, so let me go rapidly. You can sensitivity down to very low energy. You have can recognize the nuclear recoils, okay. And but the price that you have to pay is to operate at very low temperature, that we operate at 40 millikelvin. Very complex technologies that I don't have time to describe. Yes. So the thing which is important is that we have multidimensional discrimination. We plot the ratio, we measure the ionization and the phonons in our detectors, okay? And normalize so that the electrons recoils are around one, and then we bring a nuclear neutron source, and they come, it comes around 0.3. And that's a discrimination. Now, the things that you are worried about are these events in that region kind of raining down, and they are due to surface electrons. But because we do timing, we can essentially eliminate them totally. In addition to the ionization yield, we can have some timing parameters. And basically, we have a two-dimensional discrimination, not to enter into too much detail, and we can eliminate them. And so we fix our cuts blind with calibration sources so that we get about 0.5 events. We expect 0.5 events from the background. Then we, that's what we get, okay? This is our blind cut. We are not allowed to look into this region ever before the last minute. Then we open the cut, we open the box, okay? So yeah, open the box, and there are a few events there. Then we put our timing cut. Nothing. Okay. So this shows you the power of the technology. And so basically, that's what we get. A little better than xenon, and hopefully also. With much smaller systematics. And the immediate future, we have basically three times already the amount of data that we have shown, and we should be able to do at least a factor two better than what we have shown you. And other experiments are also trying to do similar things. Is there any future in low temperature detectors? That's the question that many of us are asking ourselves. We have a very complex technology, but with zero background, we believe we do. Let me skip that. I don't have time for that. So 23. We have essentially larger detector masses, and we have much larger detectors, maybe going to one ton. Okay, so let me just make a few remarks, if I can have 2 minutes, So this is the overall picture. Okay, so this is the same graph as I showed you. And there I have colored, used the same color code in that graph to just show you where this, in this cross sections versus mass, where the various regions are. So we are here. We believe that basically we have already the data to be here, but we have not analyzed them. We are proposing to go there in the next 2 years, and maybe there in the next 15 years. By 2015. Okay. Okay. Let me. GLIAS, by the way, is sensitive to both this branch and this branch. And look at this yellow region. That's the region where the large electron collider is sensitive. The large LHC will not be sensitive to very high mass WIMPs because they don't have the energy to produce the gluino, which is six times the mass of the neutralino. And so we may be in a region where we could see something, and LHC is not seeing anything. Okay, so indirect detection, very rapidly, neutrinos, gammas, positrons, and annihilation. This is the first sky image of gas Fermi. Hess, isometric Cherenkov detectors. This is their source close to the galactic center, a parallel. People try to fit it with a very large mass WIMP, but there is no particular reason to do that. And then we come to the discussion of yesterday. And can we use this this substructure to kind of enhance the annihilation signal? And I would say, okay, so this is the one of the teams. The other team has not put their slides on the web yet. So but we have really two complementary strategies. Looking at the broad peak close to the galactic center, and then looking at the sabello. The sabellos will be a smoking halo for hierarchical clustering, that what is very nice about it, and maybe easier to subtract. Obviously, GLASS will do both. But I was encouraged by the technical discussions between the two groups. They seem to agree that most of the substructure is outside, or relatively far, that in the center of the galaxy, the boost factors are very small. So basically, that every all the ad hoc explanations that we have seen in the last few years of trying to explain some extra gamma spectrum with boost factors of 200, 2,000 doesn't make a lot of sense. I should probably stop here.
Okay, thanks, Bernard. So we can open up the questions, and if you have any questions about the topics like Pamela or Dama or anything like that, feel free to ask it during this time. So we'll start with Andy.
So could you bring back your slide of where we are today with the different limits by different methods? It was just a few slides ago.
Okay, let me try to. So 22, let's try. No, okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Where on this is, you know, what, say, Ice Cube could detect from WIMPs from the center, or neutrinos from the center of the Earth?
Okay. It's actually not very favorable for particles which are coupling with scalar interactions. They are doing less well than they will do less well than we do at the moment. And then, of course, they are more sensitive for particles coming from the sun, but with scalar independent interactions. But the sun is not oriented in a particularly good way compared to the South Pole, because the neutrinos will come on the side. They may see something, but basically, I have actually a slide if you allow me. Which is 47. So this is the this is what. Basically what you expect, the correlation between what you expect in Ice Cube and what you could expect in direct detection. And we should be in this region, and Ice Cube will be above this region. So there are all these things that we will be able to see, and they won't be able to see. That's for scalar interaction.
And so will Antares do better in for the sun?
It will be significantly better because of the 45 degree So, but interest is not big. So now it will be a few years. There is good agreements between the various European groups to get to the next stage, but this is not approved yet.
Are you remotely impressed by the PAMELA results, the annihilation, the positron?
No, I was mostly impressed by the.
Because what's not clear from their papers is the extent to which the model background.
Which paper?
Oh gosh. Well, oh, I'm sorry. The ones that photographed the screen and measured the results off their images.
Okay. Yes, this is it. Okay. So sociologically, it's actually interesting. So what PAMELA basically does. Does more or less reproduce the results of heat. Now, I don't know enough about their detector whether they have they could have contamination from pi pluses contaminating their positrons. And this really one of the questions, and I have not heard their talk. I don't know whether they are provided. This was the argument against heat to take the signal seriously. But these guys are fitting with this spin one Kaluza-Klein type thing at very high energy, you see. There is another paper by Bergstrom and company which tried to fit it with a minimum supersymmetric using these new ideas about radiative corrections, which are important. So there they are a little more discreet about the points. But okay, so that's the kind of fits that they have. In both cases, if I understand well, the B factor that you need are 2,000. So if you believe Julio and Carlos and Piero and Mike, no, there is no reason for two.
Yeah, I should also add most of these positrons come from very locally too, that they're measuring if they come from dark matter. So, and they need, but they need boosting factors of like, whatever he said.
2,000.
Yeah, something like that. So.
I'm back here. So it's true that there are maybe not very many individual subhalos close to the Earth, but there could be lots of streams as we saw yesterday. So could you comment on what the implications would be for direct detection experiments with directional sensitivity? Is it really safe to just assume, you know, 0.3 GeV per cubic centimeter and no
okay,
structure
so
velocity
we,
space?
As I said before, we are using a standard model with the spherical Kao approximation of the of the halo. It has two implications. Okay, so we could have a slight change of the velocity of densities. Okay. And that could help or deplete, not be helpful depending on whether density is higher or lower. Now, for modulation or directionality detection, this can change the picture quite a bit. Okay, so now there have been attempts to fit the modulation curve of gamma by modifying the locally at least the halo and having a co-rotating halo where the influence of the velocity of the Earth was more enhanced. To first order, none of this works. Do you agree?
So I wanted to comment on Mike's point that what we're finding in the Aquarius simulations and also from previous calculations is that you have such a large number of streams going through the solar neighborhood of rather low density that it's very unlikely that you're dominated just by one of them.
Yeah.
So I think the number actually affects the results
higher. It would have to be a lot higher to make a difference, like 20% or something.
Yeah.
So I guess I have two. I wanted to start with a comment for the indirect detection. I think that this issue of the boost is certainly true in the if we believe that if we can extrapolate their results down to 10 to the minus 6 solar masses, which I'm not convinced we can, then it is true you're not going to have any boost in the center of the galaxy. But where you will potentially have a more important boost will be in more distant dwarf spheroidals, for example, that are about 100 kpc, because then you really are looking at the full boost from the whole system. So if we want to be optimistic about the prospects of a boost, I would say you certainly can't go larger than 200. But if you want to try to be optimistic, that's the place that you might get a boost by a couple orders of magnitude. Now, unfortunately, the issue there is we can't calculate the boost unless we know the density profiles of substructures that are mass 10 to the minus 6 solar masses, and that's pretty hard. But anyway, so the question that I have goes back to this local density issue, the spherical cowl. And it seems like there should be a big push from the astronomical side of this question to try to provide you with a number with an error bar.
Yes, I agree.
And I wonder if there are any people in the room who thought... I don't know why I'm giving it to Louis. Louis, fix it. A number with an error bar based on future surveys, like what will Gaia do to help us constrain the local dark matter density in addition to future radial velocity surveys, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, in principle, we should be able to give them a number with a meaningful error bar, because if you detect something, you want to know what the local density is.
I don't know what he's saying. That's important to show.
Does anyone? I don't know the answer, but
I agree. we should do that. I think there will be more interest as soon as there is a beginning of a claim that.
So maybe just a follow-up to that question. If you do detect something with direct detection, what's then the link to cosmology? I mean, suppose there's an uncertainty of a factor of 10 in what the local density of dark matter is. You know, maybe there isn't, but suppose playing around with just the macroscopic halo models, you say we don't actually know, you know, it could be 0.3 GeV or it could be 0.1 or more.
Okay, so initially, what we can do is more related to the particle physics aspect. That is, we could initially give it an order of magnitude of the cross section within this factor 3 or factor 10, whatever is the uncertainty. And that's interesting for the particle physicist, because this may solve part of the ambiguities in trying to reconstruct this very to know where in the parameter space you are. And we could also give the mass, which helps them reconstruct the ladder. So that would be helpful. Now, a little bit down the line, if supersymmetry, say, is detected and at LHC and the parameters are well known, then you can turn around and they will give us a cross section, and up to the nuclear physics uncertainty of interactions with the nucleus, which are not negligible either, you can then get the local density that way. So, and the third aspect that I would like to say, that if you have a huge boost of investment in spite of what is happening on Wall Street, we could take 0.001% of the current bailout package or something. we could measure very precisely the differential energy distribution, which gives us actually the initial velocity distribution. So we could get to the velocity distribution, but we need very, very large statistics.
Okay, so I think we should move on here. I'm disappointed no one asked about Dhamma, but if anyone wants to ask about Dhamma, you should do it during lunch. okay, so let's move on to James Binney, new models or new methods for